And we showed up to the meeting. This is our first time like ever meeting these people. We showed up to the meeting with insertion orders like already printed out. Like, what?
Confident.
Ignorant more than confident.
Crunch them up when you get there.
Early to bed, early to rise, eat right and advertise. Early to bed, early to rise. One more thing, get your name out there.
Hello and welcome to Paleo Ad Tech. I'm Marty Kine.
And I'm Jill Royce, and we are the hosts of this podcast that looks at the first two decades of advertising and marketing technology.
From double click to double verify and everything in between.
Get your name out there.
This week, we are very happy to welcome Michael Katz to the program. Mike is the co-founder and CEO of mParticle, which is a customer data platform. Before that, he was co-founder and president of InterClick, which he started in 2005. InterClick went public in 2009 and was acquired by Yahoo in 2011 for a reported $270 million. Mike went on to work at Yahoo as VP of Optimization and Analytics before founding mParticle in 2013. So we're going to take you back in the Wayback Machine and talk a little bit about school. Did you have a plan for your career?
Sure didn't.
No ambiguity there.
No, I think from a very early age, I think seeing my dad be an entrepreneur, I knew I was eventually going to go into business for myself and start a company. I just didn't know what that meant, what it would be, when it would be. You know, I was probably like most people chasing the tech dream. So I graduated college in about 2000. First company I worked for right after school was one of like the early darling childs of like the dot-com boom. It was an internet consultancy called Zephyr. They raised, I think, the largest VC round for like a quote-unquote internet company. Yeah, it was an awesome place to work. I learned so much about culture and the importance of treating people the right way and using culture as an asset, but then also learned like how not to scale a business ultimately, because they blew through like the $100 million round and like I think it was like 15 months and had to sell off all the assets. And they were, you know, a victim of the times. It was more of an internet consultancy, so they were standing up websites for companies.
So when was your first exposure actually to ad tech?
Yeah, it was a couple of years later. So after that, I went to Accenture for a couple of years. Did a stint in Chicago working with McDonald's for a bit, and then I got redeployed to like East Hartford. That was kind of it for me. And right around the same time, a good friend of mine was finishing up school, and he won an entrepreneurship class. I was living in Boston at the time, and he had just started his company. His company, like, they created one of the first pop-up blockers online. It was like, remember way back in the day where it was like everybody hit you with pop-ups, and then like,
oh, yeah.
Then you had like the era of like adware, spyware. You know, you downloaded like free
plugins.
File sharing, yeah, things, and your computer became like terminally ill. He had started the company and they started to do well. And what he realized was that if he bought pop-ups and said like, hey, don't pop-ups suck, he could drive a lot of sales.
Ironic, Tony! Trying to rid the world of weapons, you gave it his best one ever! Yep.
And so we were roommates at the time, and it just kind of exposed me to, you know, this whole world that like I was more like a kind of passenger on, right? Like everything kind of digital, and I was trying to wrap my head around it, but I was unhappy at the job that I had at the time. And he said like, hey, we have some cool ideas that we want to run with on the marketing side. If I can convince my dad to write us a check, what do you think about like starting this as a separate business? And I was like, cool, let's do it. Like I came off of a stint at Accenture. I was like, I'm good with spreadsheets. I can probably make some presentations. I think I can analyze information. And so what's the worst that can happen? We'll figure it out as we go. And that was the first foray into ad tech.
I love that you used a pop-up blocker to advertise blocking pop-ups.
Yeah. That's clever.
So we started the company with about $25,000 that my friend's father had given us. And But it was probably like the biggest check I'd ever seen at sure. the time. And I'll never forget, like he was handing it to me and he pulled it back right as I was about to grab it from him. He said, make it work because I'm not writing another one. So what we were there to survive, basically.
So then how did you sort of get a little momentum going for Interclick in the beginning?
Yeah. Well, we did have a little bit of an unfair advantage because we had my friend's company and we were just basically like arbitraging some media in the early days, buying ads and pop-ups in places that we already knew would work. So we weren't starting from like a complete standing start, but like I knew nothing about advertising and I knew a little bit about the internet and kind of how it all worked. And so there was a pretty steep learning curve regardless.
Were you aware of ad networks at the time? Like there was a Value Click and advertising.com and some of those Double Click.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Fast Click, Value.
All the clicks.
And that's why we ended up calling it Interclick, because we wanted it to kind of blend into these bigger players and have people feel like, oh, they must've been around for a bit. But yeah. I had no idea about any of those guys leading up to the launch. Like I obviously became very familiar with them kind of shortly thereafter.
So where was your garage that you launched in, or what was your kind of space like where you were situated?
Yeah. I had an apartment in Brookline, Massachusetts, right on Mass Ave. And, an interesting story is that, so the first developer that we hired him from Craigslist, actually. He's a young kid who had just graduated art school, but taught himself how to code. And he helped build some ads and build some properties for us and websites. He's still with us today. Like he's him and I and my brother, like we've worked together, almost 20 years at this point. But yeah, it was a nice little apartment in Brookline. And then we were, as we started to get a little bit of momentum, before there was WeWork, there was this Cambridge Innovation Center, which was like co-working space, very much like ahead of its time. And we were like one of the first tenants in there. And that was home for a little bit.
So how did you go about selling what you were doing? Was it a difficult pitch?
I think that there was maybe a step before that, which is like back then the digital ad ecosystem had like a bunch of like ad middlemen and like ad brokers who just like arbitrage relationships. And so I think I got introduced to like one or a couple of these guys through trying to make some ad placements for that pop-up blocker. And, that was really the genesis of it. And then even before we started selling really anything, there was, even to this day, there was a bunch of affiliate programs where we would just go and we'd see like what offers were out there, and you could sign up for free and you'd pull down the links and you could try to arbitrage media, and you would test and you would measure and you would iterate. Most of it didn't work, but sometimes you could catch lightning in a bottle. And when you did, you tried to really just run it into the ground. And that's what we did. We got super profitable very quickly. And I think within like 3 months or so, we turned that 25K. I think we had like $1 million in the bank.
That's not bad. So in the beginning, you were, I suppose, trying to make money. But when you started to think of yourself as a company, obviously you needed some kind of difference from other people. What were you thinking that would be?
That evolution probably happened, I don't know, maybe like a year and a half in or so. Like once we realized like we could pay ourselves pretty decently, that like, I don't know, at the time it was like, if I can build $1 million company, that's success. You know, like I will have made it. I've made my dad proud, like the whole thing. And then you realize like, okay, like I can do this and it's probably not at risk of imploding tomorrow. I don't know how big it can get, but like, let's start thinking about like, not just like paying ourselves a bunch, but starting to reinvest back into the business. The first thing that we did, we moved off of like third-party ad serving technology and we built out our own. We were using a few different ones at the time. The one that really stands out is like Fast Click's old ad server. Was like Media, I think it was Mediaplex back in the day. And it was good, because there was very detailed, granular reporting, but they wouldn't tell you the site names. They would just say like it was all obfuscated. And I was like, well, why does that make sense? Like I should kind of be like able
today.
To say, exactly.
With the ad like networks, that, yeah.
For sure. And so yeah. we went to market as the first transparent ad network. And buyers loved it. The other people around the space were like, you can't do that. Like, that's not what happens here. Like, we pissed some people off, but like, we weren't from, like, I didn't grow up in like the media space or like the ad space or ad tech space. So like, I didn't care what anybody thought. I was just like, this, if we're going to do something, we're going to do it the way that I think it should be done. And that was like, that was when it really started to take off.
Was it hard to build an ad server? I mean, is that a complex piece of technology?
Yes. Yes.
It seems like it would be. I mean, there it can be various levels of complexity, obviously, but
I would say like you can do it with, you know, small, like maybe moderate investment, but like to do it right is definitely complicated. And then to run an ad network business, same thing. Like if you're trying to build a few million dollar company, like you can do it, but yeah. If you want to build something that's sustainable and has scale, you need to be much more sophisticated. And ad networks, it's just, you know, you got to manage your digital supply chain. Yeah, that was a really steep learning curve. So we relocated the company from Boston or Cambridge at the time down to South Florida. So way ahead of my time, moved down to South Florida for about a year. We did a search for a couple engineers, and we found a couple of guys that wanted to leave the Fort Lauderdale Microsoft office at the time, and just like they wanted good salaries and they wanted to work on interesting problems, and they didn't really want any equity. And it's like, all right, great. So let's move the company, which was like, you know, four of us. It was like me, that early engineer, my brother, and like one of my best friends from college at the time, like in the dead of winter in Boston, down to South Florida, like the easiest sell anybody could ever make. And we stayed there for a year while we built out, like, you know, the first version of like our own proprietary ad server. And when it was like kind of ready to go to market, we knew the business had to be up in New York if we were going to scale this thing. And we allowed the engineers, who were, there was probably six of them at the time, at that point, we said like, do you want to move up to New York or do you want to stay in Florida? And I don't even think I got to finish my sentence, and they're like, we're staying in Florida.
That's it, huh?
Easy choice for them. Totally.
No brainer.
Yeah.
Who were some of the early customers?
It was like direct response stuff. Some of the sexy ones, like, so Netflix was like a huge buyer of like direct response media for a while. So they were one of our bigger ones. There was a company called Gamefly. The first like branded campaign that I remember an agency placed with us, it was for New Line Cinema. I think the first one was maybe Wedding Crashers around that time. Oh. Like, oh, okay, we can actually win agency business. And it's actually really funny because we still, like, we had no idea what we were doing. And by the time we had moved up to New York and we were starting to call on more agencies, and we hired a couple of folks that had like been there and done that before. They weren't very good. Like, they were like very much like your journeyman like media sales rep, but like they kind of showed us the ropes. We went to Boston one day to meet with there may have been like Hill Holiday, and we showed up to the meeting. This is our first time like ever meeting these people. We showed up to the meeting with insertion orders like already printed out. Like, what?
Confident.
Ignorant more than confident.
Crunch them up when you get there.
I still joke about that to this day with some of the guys that have been along for both rides. Like,
that's amazing. So sounds like you obviously were doing a lot of selling to agencies. Did you do much in the way of a sort of like direct to brand?
Only like in the later days. So there was like really, there was like three periods of Interclick. One was just like survival. Two was like really launching our own kind of like core value proposition as like the first transparent ad network. And then right around like 2008, 2009, that's when we started to invest in our data platform. We hired a guy named Jason Lin to come in as our head of product. And you know, most of the credit goes to, the vast majority of the credit goes to him. This is really his brainchild. I get to take some of the credit. He came in with a bunch of ideas in terms of where the space was and where it needed to go. And we felt very much aligned from like how we wanted to operate from a philosophical standpoint. That was really the thing that allowed us to separate ourselves from the rest of the space, which was like very crowded and undifferentiated, and you know, almost kind of feels like the CDP space these days.
Get your name out there.
You lived through the recession of 2008-2009. How did that impact the business?
Yeah. Well, so 2007 came, and like we had gone from like basically nothing. We were doing we did $3 million in revenue the year before. 2007, we ended up doing about $10 million. But I had a phone call with one of my co-founders who was like a silent partner. And it was like middle of the summer, and you know, your kind of quintessential like status check-in, and how's the business going? I was like, oh great, like I think we can do 10 million this year. Holy crap, like let's sell the thing. Like I think we can build this into something pretty substantial. And he's like, well, if you want to, you can, but if you can get like me and my dad out of the business for a few million bucks, like, you know, more power to you. And, you know, at the time I'm like, what am I not getting? Like he's not really seeing it, but I think he was looking at it from the standpoint of like return on investment. Like for him, it would have been like turning 25K into like a $3 million check. But like,
that's good.
That's what we ended up doing. And, but it like leading up to that, it put us in kind of a weird spot because we were on like a pretty good ride. Although there was a co-founder who wanted to exit the business. We weren't big enough for like private equity, and like every VC I think that we had started talking to became totally spooked that this guy wanted to cash out. So we had to find like non-traditional financing, and that's when I ended up getting linked up with the guys that did a reverse merger. So we were like, you know, again being way ahead of our time, like we SPAC'd the company, not onto NASDAQ, but we were traded over the counter. And so we went from like, you know, 12 guys operating out of a office in New York City. We were in Chinatown, and we were lucky if we had like toilet paper and paper towels in the office. And now we were like, you know, this over-the-counter publicly traded company. It forced us though to get really efficient with the way that we operated the business for better or worse, probably worse in the grand scheme of things. But like in that zoom into that moment in time, there was just no luxury for a ton of excess. Like there was as little overhead as possible. And so by the time the downturn happened, you know, this is 2008. Yeah, we did, I think, between 10 and 11 million in revenue in 2007, 2008. We ended up doing 22 million in revenue because there was kind of a flight to value. And that's typically what you see in these downturns. Like some of the ad networks just did really well because everybody was doing like performance-based marketing, lead gen, like that, like the brand stuff got put on pause. And then, you know, getting into 2009, you know, I started to build out the team. I think the team was like 50 people or so. And we tried doing a fundraise, and we flew out to the West Coast. And it was like my first time ever formally fundraising. And when I tell you, like, we got laughed out, like laughed off of Sand Hill Road. Like people were just like, what are you talking about?
You're a funny guy, Sally. I like you. That's why I'm going to kill you last.
And this is like, we had started to articulate the vision around like how data and media needed to be merged and how you could use data to drive performance. And people were just like, what are you talking about? You know, we had projected to go from 20 million in revenue to 28 million in revenue that year, about 40% growth. And like we kind of left that West Coast trip with our tail between our legs. We ended up doing 55 million in revenue in 2009. And so we turned a lot of heads and made a lot of people believers, including ourselves, in terms of like what we were doing. You know, I had a conversation with my CFO at the time. And I said, like, you know, we're in this kind of weird over the counter, you know, publicly traded status. Like, what do we need to do to uplist to NASDAQ and like take a real shot at this thing? And he came back to me in a couple of days and he's like, honestly, we meet every requirement. Like, we would just need to do like a reverse stock split. So we're trading over $4 for more than a month. And we did that. And shortly thereafter, we uplisted to NASDAQ and did, you know, like a quote unquote real IPO, which like was still very modest in terms of like size. It was like $18 million and six of it went to like the guys that helped us do that SPAC.
You had a picture, you know, ringing the bell. Yeah,
exactly.
So in terms of your product there over this period, you had something called Open Segment Manager and then Genome, which may have been after. Can you explain what those were exactly? What made them special?
Yeah. So Open Segment Manager is the data platform that I was alluding to. And back then, what you had was a bunch of ad networks that were all touting the quality of their like proprietary data network. So like specific media back then would talk about like how accurate their demographic targeting engine was. You would have like different networks with like different types of data, psychographic data, intent data, interest-based data. And part of the thesis behind Open Segment Manager is like none of that is interesting individually, but all of it is interesting collectively because there is no silver bullet as it relates to data. And you kind of need to strip out like a lot of the marketing and be just, you know, a lot more quantitative and objective about the impact of data on media and creative. So part of the spec was like be able to ingest data from basically anywhere. The next part of it was to be able to then operationalize that data much faster than the next fastest alternative. So back then it was like it would take, I think, Dakota like a day when like things would update in their audience targeting system to like get propagated out to their ad server or their ad network. And we could do things in under an hour. And so the performance gains were massive. I'd say that like the hardest thing that we had to crack was what is the taxonomy that could map really to like any taxonomy, whether we knew what it looked like or not. And so being able to do like to kind of put certain boundaries in place and then within those boundaries effectively kind of have like schema on read. So like if one of our data partners taxonomies broke or things got put into like a new node or a child of that node and we weren't ready for it, it didn't just like break the whole system. And that was like, it's tough to get people really excited about that, but that was like a really important innovation.
So it's a value-based network. So were you measuring outcomes? I mean, were you selling against, it's a performance metrics, right? So you were selling clicks, you were selling conversions.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And the nice thing is like we had that closed loop mechanism, right? Because we could see ultimately as all of the data was coming in and we would map all of this like third party data that we would get from these various like data exchanges like Exalate, Blue Kai. Map those to cookies that we were seeing within our footprint, within our ad network. And then so you could ultimately see like for the people who were clicking on ads or going all the way through to conversion, what was ultimately like their DNA as defined by all of these different third party data sources. And then you ultimately like you create a benchmark, which was usually like a run of network line item or campaign. And then you would look at like the impact of different data points and their impact on performance.
And then Genome, was that an evolution of Open Segment Manager or was that something different?
Yeah, no, it was. Yeah. We said like, well, if this has created a competitive advantage for us, we can probably unbundle this from our own ad server and start to offer this as a standalone thing. And you know, right when like it really started to take off, like that's ultimately like when Yahoo and a few others came calling.
So yes, we both want to talk about Yahoo. So can you tell us a little bit about that? You were acquired, obviously, in 2011. How did that come about?
You know, for 6 years, like, nobody called. There was like no interest in the business. And then 2011 came and it was like three or four companies, like pretty much all at once. And it was Yahoo, it was Epsilon. Felt like at the end of the day, thinking about our legacy, it was going to be, it was night and day, Yahoo versus the other company that I can't even remember.
Yahoo had a better brand.
For sure. For sure.
So what was your experience like at Yahoo? I believe you were there for a few different CEOs.
I was there for five CEOs from, let's see if I can remember. Yeah, it was Carol Bartz, and then it was Tim Morse, who was the CFO, became acting CEO. It was Scott Thompson, who had like the resume gate thing.
Oh yeah.
And then after that, it was Ross Levinson. And then after that, it was Marissa. And so it was like every 2 or 3 months, there was a new CEO. That was fun. Not exactly what I thought I was signing up for, but, in the fullness of time, I've come to appreciate the lessons that were learned along the way.
So about Yahoo on this topic, so we hear, you know, different stories, and you may not want to say anything, which is okay. But, you know, like Bill Wise was talking about the right media culture clash, I guess, or something. But yeah. Then Blue Lithium was acquired, and they said it was beautiful, and they loved it, and they fit right in, and it was very harmonious. Were you somewhere on that spectrum?
You know, you go from, you know, I think we were like 150 people at the time, this like mission driven, like hard charging company full of young people who cared, who were pouring their blood, sweat, and tears into something, to like you get to Yahoo and people are like punching in at 11 and out at 3 and nobody cared, and there were layers of bureaucracy, and I was naive enough to think like, well, you know, we can help make a change there. Not even close. Nor should we have even really ever thought that. It was more just kind of my naivete. But yeah. I don't know, look, there was some good. There was some that didn't necessarily live up to what I had imagined. Ultimately I had a bit of a dramatic ending there where I got called in to meet with like the head of HR at the time. She had she was also running Corp Dev, and so I like she kind of made the note seem like she was going to pick my brain about like interesting startups, and she wanted to meet for a drink on a Sunday night at Dos Caminos on Park Ave. And so I met her, and this is like on almost at the 1 year anniversary, so this is like 360 something day, right? And we meet on a Sunday, and she shows up like 15 minutes late, and you know, usually I would have just like bounced at that point, but I was like, I said I was going to be here. She comes in, and I said like, well, should we get a drink? And she's like, well, I'm here to let you know there's no longer a spot for you at the company. And she handed me this like manila envelope and turned around and walked away. And I was like, all right, well, I guess I'm getting a drink.
Somebody needs a drink. I guess it wasn't her.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that happens. Wow. So in terms of Genome though, did they embrace Genome at Yahoo? I mean, did they?
Ross did.
So they adopted it for a bit, right?
They did. The thesis on the deal was like, it was right. Yahoo had all of this inventory. It had some high quality data assets, but its personalization products had become really antiquated. Its ad targeting products had basically fallen off a cliff. They were still trying to do like persona-based segmentation, just like and they were feeling the pressure. And so it was like, Interclick, you guys have built the brain. We can leverage this for like owned and operated targeting and personalization. But they also had the Yahoo Ad Network. And so it was like, we're going to kind of merge these two things. And Ross's vision was spot on, you know. Yeah. Politics just kind of won out. And then when Marissa came in, she didn't know anything about anything. Genome didn't live too much longer after that.
So mParticle, that's a kind of a whole different industry, but I do notice that it's not in ad tech. Did you consciously sort of get out of advertising at that point, or was it more organic than that?
We had built up a ton of domain expertise. We had some pretty strong views in terms of where the world was going based on what we had seen at InterClick and then also our time at Yahoo. And we felt like we could build something for the future. Felt like we never really got the full opportunity that we felt like we deserved. And so we were all motivated to build again. And, you know, the things that we're doing at mParticle to this day is exactly what we set out to do back in 2013. Like, they're just like, we've updated and upgraded our ability to articulate them, but it's still exactly the same.